Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in time for KER Politics. I have a very interesting author on the line whose area of expertise and his books are right up the alley of the subject of the day right now, which is obviously the coronavirus. The gentleman's name is William Arntz. He's the author of a book entitled How to Suffer in 10 Easy Steps. He's a filmmaker. He's a founder of a creative works company called Captured Life. And, you know, with the COVID-19 pandemic cause of massive suffering on a global scale right now, Will is going to discuss why people often hide their sufferings, and maybe that's really not a good idea. We're involved in the biggest the COVID-19 pandemic is obviously America's biggest public health crisis in close to 100 years. A lot of deaths, a lot of infections, a lot of unemployment, business closures, a lot of bad stuff going on right now. Alcoholism, drug abuse, depression, suicide, etc., etc. Will is going to help us get out of that. Will, number one, talk a little bit, if you would, about what are some of the steps of suffering, and how can suffering be used as a benefit, sir?
Well, the big thing, you really got to start out with the attitude about the suffering. And the thing is, everyone suffers. You know, this life we have here in the world, something always happens, something goes wrong. People suffer all the time. But the first thing you got to do is figure out what's your attitude about it. Because
right.
If you're someone who just goes like, oh, geez, you know, this is bad, or that person's bad, or you blame people, then you're not going to get the wisdom, the learning, the evolution that's intrinsic in the suffering. So first off, you got to decide whether it's just a lousy universe you live in that has it out for you, or this is an opportunity to grow and to change. And
yeah.
So once you have that set, then you're ready to go ahead and look at what's really happening to you.
You know, I'm really curious to hear what you have to say. And I think most of our listeners are too, Will. You know, it's funny. We have a very active blog associated with the radio show. And I spent about 2 hours on the blog last night. And we had about 70 comments or thereabout, which is a good number of comments. And the one thing that I would have to say is I got up from my chair in my studio and I just said to myself, God, I can't live like this. This is some of the most depressing time, and my listeners seem to agree with me. Their feelings are turning into extremely high level of anger, and I wish I could do something to show them that perhaps is not the best direction to go in. Can you help out, Will?
Yeah, I mean, the anger is what happens is the entire world has been put on retreat.
Yep.
And this has never happened in the history of the world. There's been times where there was wars where everyone's focused on that. But this is the time where everyone was told to stop. It's a retreat. And people go on retreats in order to get a look at your life, to step back, to break the addictions that you have to, you know, maybe it's entertainment, maybe it's food, whatever, and to give yourself some perspective. But now, we've all been forced to do that. So basically, what it means is all this stuff is going to come up. Things that you've not been dealing with, things that have bothered you in the past that you didn't deal with because you were watching sports and drinking beer all the time,
or right.
whatever you do. So all the stuff is going to come up. So I think the first thing is you got to realize people's tempers are going to be short, yours included. You know, you're going to be pushed to the max, and this is a real test for everyone. And so once you frame it within that, and you know that you're not alone, that other people are going through this too. So part of what I've been learning, if I've been dealing with people, and people, you know, they get upset, they're very snappy at you. Instead of like reacting back, you just remember, look, we're all being put to the test here. And, you know, that now is the time to come together and get through this, you know, as a group, as a unit, as a bunch of people together figuring out our common problem. that's where we got to go.
But are people willing to do that? I'm finding in my particular universe, for lack of better terms, I'm seeing an awful lot of anger, whether it's when I go in on the golf course and play, you know, a few holes with a neighbor or what have you. I am seeing, well, nothing but anger, and I'm seeing bitter anger. Why don't people realize? I mean, I realize how unproductive that is. How do you get away from it?
Well, what you got to do is you got to, this is part of the retreat, you got to go inside, you say, okay, where is that anger coming from? And some of it, and people aren't going to like to hear this right now, but some of it is like you take the toys away from a kid and what do? They get angry.
Yep.
So part of this is all of our grown-up toys. We've constructed our lives to have all this stuff in and all these activities, whatever we do. And it's been taken away now. And so, of course, that anger is going to come up, but that's really a childish reaction to it. You can not like it, you may feel sad about that, but to be angry about that is saying, no, I wanna have that, and I'm pissed that I can't have the second ice cream cone. And realize that, then you say, okay, that's where, again, the retreat, you got to take stock with yourself and be honest. And we're all being put to it. This is never, like I said, people have to realize this has never happened in the history of the planet, where the entire planet is going through the same thing. We have the same common enemy. And you know those science fiction movies like War of the Worlds, where the Martians come?
You bet.
And finally, the nations of the world start cooperating to defeat a common enemy?
You bet.
That's what we'd like to see happening now, because we all have a common enemy, and you know, the society, the world is being put to a test of are you going to come together and cooperate and try to work with people? I have an example of that is there were these some states are opening up early, right?
Right.
And there's this conflict about that. People are really, you know, upset about it. And the thing is that, you know, you could frame it like, okay, Georgia, you're opening it up early. Well, we may not think that's a good idea, but, you know, you're actually providing a valuable service. You're going to show us whether we can do it or not, and you're willing to take the risk. So if you think about it that way, it's a unification. You're saying, look, okay, you guys are doing it. I may not agree, but thank you for doing it. We're going to learn something from it. But instead, everything gets polarized, and people are upset about that, and you know, it's a shame. It's really a shame.
Well, it really is a shame. Now, I want you to think about one thing, if you would. We've got to take a break here. We've got a little bit of time, but I want you to think about one thing, and that is, why do people find it so hard to accept the statement that you just made? Because that's a real common sense statement that sure as hell would allow me to sleep better at night, Will.
You mean the one about getting Georgia together and cooperating?
The one about Georgia. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a society, we've gotten into this thing of this extreme polarization. And, you know, I'm 70 years old. I didn't see this growing up like that. Yeah, there's differences of opinion. You always have that. People have differences of opinion. But somehow, we've gotten into this thing where it's very extreme and people just dig their heels in, and they won't compromise. And you know, you say, why did that happen? You know, society swings from one thing to another. You know, for a while, everything's very expansive, and then it contracts. This is just something, when you look at history, you see it's a phase you go through. And unfortunately, we're going to see what this extreme polarization does, because it's right now it's crippling the effort to really fight our common foe.
Absolutely. Will, we have to take a real quick commercial break here in about 7 seconds. Stations need to sell their wares, et cetera, et cetera. But we're going to be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you, William Hart is a winner of a guest. We'll be right back with him.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. I'm continuing with my discussion with William Arntz here. I'm so enthused about what this gentleman is saying right now. We're going to turn something into a weekend special. Will talks a little bit about how to utilize suffering to an advantage. We're going to do a weekend special on that. I'll put together a little bit of a workshop for you folks because I think this idea is incredibly germane for the time. So we're going to go on with this particular segment. We're going to relate it more to politics than to that, but then we will podcast also the clinic, for lack of better terms, that William Arntz has put together, and the clinic dealing with how to make suffering your friend, for lack of better terms, how to use it to your advantage. Well, what I'm curious about is right now, what I want to go into here for the next 8 minutes or so, is we have an election coming up in November. It looks like, although it's not cast in concrete, it looks like probably it's going to be President Trump versus Joe Biden, although I think the Democrats have probably picked not the most effective candidate. And I feel sorry about that because I think there was a point in his career with Joe Biden when Joe Biden was, as Peggy Noonan, the really well-known columnist, says, one of the most decent people in the world. But anyway, having said that, I don't want to talk about that so much. I want to talk about why people make the political decisions that they make. You know, you cannot talk about, let's say, a Nancy Pelosi or a Barbara Boxer or a Mike Pence or a Donald J. Trump in the same sentence without one of the people in that argument getting absolutely red in the face, getting very emotional, and actually screaming their opinions as opposed to discussing them. In your opinion, Will, why is that? Because I think that that is diminishing, number one, the stature of our country, and number two, I think it's diminishing the potential effectiveness of the United States of America, a country that I absolutely love.
Well, I agree with you on what you said, number one and number two. To answer your question, why is that? Well, somehow politics has been turned into religion, and it becomes about belief, not about facts. And your beliefs are really sort of your core values, and I talk about that in my How to Suffer book, mm-hmm. that those core values drive so much of what we do, and yet people tend not to examine them. So once you have a belief, I mean, everyone gets to believe whatever they want to.
You bet.
The facts are the facts, but everyone can believe it. So once you have a belief firmly established, then you will go around and find everything basically to agree to that belief. I mean, I have a friend, a very smart friend, who basically is a flat earther. He's convinced the earth is flat, and I, you know, tell him all this stuff, and he's like, no, that's just thought that people made that up. So once you have that belief firmly rooted, that's it. Well, there was a reason why the Founding Fathers said separation of church and state.
Right.
That's the same thing as saying, look, politics is not religion. You can believe anything you want about God and the other worlds and all that stuff, but for politics, for the government, this is not about your beliefs. We need to deal with reality. We need to deal in facts. And somehow that got blurred. I mean, the whole thing about climate change, quite honestly, if you talk to 99 out of 100 real scientists who spent their life doing this, you know, they'll say, yeah, climate change is happening. And yet it got turned into a religion. It got turned into a belief system, and to the detriment of this world, by the way.
Oh, I agree.
So that's the thing. And so the notion of coming together, there was a guy in Colorado who was running for governor. And he does this thing where he says he has these dinners and he invites 4 Republicans, 4 Democrats, and 4 Independents.
He's crazy.
And they all have to sit around dinner and talk. And, you know, he told me he does this. And I'm like, this is the sort of thing, because politics, the reason politics exists is because people don't agree. If everyone agreed, you would never have politics. But because people disagree, you have politics to do that. So politics is the business of dealing with disagreement. unfortunately, politics has become, they don't deal with disagreements. They just disagree. So that's why the system is broken. You have to be able to sit down with someone who doesn't agree with them and have a talk, listen to them, and listen to the other. I mean, there's a lot of stories in the past. My favorite is one of, there's that book about Reagan and Tip O'Neill.
You bet.
When politics worked. And, you know, their story where they would, the son said he would hear his dad like, oh, that bleep, 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 O'Neill, if I ever see that bleep, 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 I'm just screaming and yelling in the White House. 2 hours later, he hears all this singing. He goes down to the second floor, and there's Tip and Ronald Reagan with their arms around each other singing Irish drinking songs.
There you go.
That's it. I mean, but somehow...
And that was one of the best times that the American people ever went through.
Yep. And they Reagan sent Tip over to Russia to see Gorbachev in the early days of that whole thing. And Gorbachev says, look, you know, Russia and U.S. were enemies. You and the Republicans are enemies. Does that mean we're allies? And Tip says, politics stops at water's edge. Boom. Just there. Politics stops at water's edge. And that sort of notion about working with people.
Yep.
Because, you know, we have more in common than not in common. Here
yes,
we're facing
we
a common, we have a common foe. That we should be like saying, okay, we're all stuck in this together. Let's help each other. So hopefully we'll get to there.
Well, I got to tell you, I really wonder sometimes, you know, my daughter suggested when I started doing radio years ago, she said, you know, Dad, you really got to have a blog associated with your radio show. And I decided to do that. I mentioned that to a friend of mine who is also, he's a personality on, I believe it's the National Catholic Radio Network. And he said, you know, he said, the worst thing in the world you can do is have a blog, because he said, you're going to bring out all the raw emotions of your listeners that even they sometimes don't even believe. He said it's really kind of interesting, and he said, Al, it's going to drive you crazy. Well, I have to say that it's not driving me crazy, but it can be very, very difficult to deal with sometimes. Well, I have to tell you, I really appreciate your views on what we just talked about. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to put up a live link to Will's book, How to Suffer in 10 Easy Steps. You'll be able to get it from Amazon if you would like to. And remember, we are also going to put together a weekend special, which will be a bit of a clinic put on by Will Arntz as to how you can truly make suffering work for you. That could be one of the most important things that the Corlin Economics Report has ever done in its 20, 25 years of existence. Will, always a pleasure. Thank you.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics. I'm chatting with a gentleman right now who is a Forbes author. His name is Edwin Basso. He is the founder and CEO of Myrtle Consulting Book, the Myrtle Consulting Group, and he's an author entitled 6,000 Dreams, The Leader's Guide to a Successful Business Transformation Journey. Mr. Basso lives down in Houston, one of my favorite cities, certainly in the United States, obviously my favorite city in Texas. Mr. Basso, tell us a little bit about the book, if you would, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure.
6,000 Dreams. 6,000 Dreams, as you said it. It's a project that I've been working on for several years. The book starts with, it's really a guide for leaders. It starts with a discussion about the higher purpose of business, but then goes very quickly into practical observations and practical examples, practical discussions on the struggles that leaders may have as they contemplate business transformation. The focus goes to the emotional journey, how to deal with people during a transformation, and it basically ends with a number of closing thoughts, you know, practical observations and practical guidance on how to take the next step on transformation.
You know, I was self-employed for about 40 years, as most of our listeners are aware. And the one question, Mr. Bosso, that I would have is, it really takes a very unique type of individual to be self-employed, to start their own company. It also takes a very unique type of individual to rise through the ranks, for lack of better terms, within a large corporation. What would you say, sir, are the main differences perhaps between those two types of individuals?
I think, as you probably also realize, I think to be a good business leader or entrepreneur, you have to be a little bit crazy.
Yes, you do. Oh, there's no question.
I'm saying that a little bit with a smile is because a lot of things that would scare or intimidate other people, that you have to be able to really ride on that. You have to be able to ride on that adrenaline rush. You have to be able to dream. You have to be able to take risks, but you also have to be very responsible, because very quickly you realize that you have lives and careers and of others that you are, you know, accountable for. So I think that's really what makes a big difference, that willingness to just, you know, press forward even when it doesn't seem that obvious.
You know, let me ask you a question. You've been to this rodeo before a number of times. Now, we're in a situation right now, as you're very well aware, where the business world is very definitely in a real state of change. How we come out once this COVID-19 thing is finally settled, how we come out the other side is something that I can't even begin to predict, as it would relate, for example, to the business community in the United States. What changes do you foresee happening, Edwin, around the corner when this thing finally does get resolved?
I think your point is a very good one. I think a lot of the risk that I see for businesses now is to just try to predict too much. And sometimes the art is really in dealing with what you know and in kind of adjusting what you're doing based on how the situation is evolving. Like you said, this is a situation that's completely unprecedented. And I think the right approach for businesses is to focus first on, you know, what are the immediate physical changes that I need to do to be in compliance with all the orders in the area where I do business? What are the things that I need to do immediately to accommodate my employees and avoid infections, etc.? Then you very quickly have to switch to cash conservation so that you can recover as much as possible from the damage of the crisis. And the third step after that, I would say, is really prepare for the transformation of your business. How do you become better and stronger than you were before the crisis? And that's going to include both looking at how the crisis has affected you, but also looking at the weaknesses that you felt you had as a business even before the crisis, because the crisis will have served to surface some of those. So if you do a comprehensive analysis of where you are at that point, I think you will set up yourself up for success.
You know, Mr. Bosso, I'd like you to do me a favor right now. You sound, and I know from our previous discussion, I know that you know quite a bit about the business community. I want you to put on your sorcerer's hat right now, if you would. Now, right now, our economy is floundering, no question about that. It's in a situation that I have never, ever dreamed would exist in the United States. How long do you think it will take for the U.S. to transform itself and come out the other side, as the president says, stronger than ever before? And do you think that that is a possible scenario in, let's say, the midterm?
Yes, I am an optimistic, and I think that it's probably going to take, it's probably not going to take as long as a lot of people predict. because it all, you know, it's all based on where the economy was before the crisis. And I think that what we're seeing now is a consequence of consumers that have not been able to, you know, get out there and spend money or travel and go on vacation. And as we evolve on the medical side, and as people feel more confident that they can get back to their lives, I think we're going to see some things that will recover naturally. There will be long-term effects. You can see that Delta, for example, is cutting down on the fleet, and that's affecting Boeing, et cetera, and then it's going to go back up the supply chain and affect plastic manufacturers and all of that. So there will be some long-term effects. But I think that as people build confidence and get out there, I think it's going to start feeling normal a lot quicker than people anticipate, unless there is a second or a third wave, as many people could predict.
Yeah, rather than get into that subject, let me say this. I'm pretty familiar with the Boeing company when I was a much, much younger man before I went on to graduate school. I did work at Boeing. My father worked at Boeing for his entire career. One of my son-in-laws is a career Boeing guy, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think Boeing has the potential of being perhaps one of the companies that could lead us out of this terrible economic trauma that we're in right now?
Well, I mean, they certainly can. I think that they're going to survive this. I think that they are first too big, and they represent too much from an industry and from a technology standpoint to suffer existentially from this. So whether they're going to be the ones leading us through this, I am not sure, because I think that they will be one of the companies that will be impacted in the short and longer term. But I certainly believe that Boeing is going to be there for the long run. I'm a big fan of Boeing, so I will be cheering for them.
Real quick, now you're down in Texas. Texas is known for its oil production. Any comments on the future of the petroleum industry in the United States?
It's an interesting question, specifically because the petroleum industry has not only been suffering from the COVID crisis, but it's also been at the intersection of the COVID crisis and some geopolitical battles, including the discussions between Saudi Arabia and Russia. So all of that, obviously, is a very complex cocktail that I don't feel like I'm very qualified to express long views about. But I certainly hope that as the economy gets back on track, as people start traveling again, as people start driving again, as the industry gets back online, China gets back online, I think that the oil industry is going to rebound. They've been there before, and each time they've come back stronger, more efficient. So I have no reason to believe that this will be different.
Mr. Basso, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Most of my guests right now are somewhat pessimistic. Your optimism is truly appreciated. Ladies and gentlemen, we have provided a live link to Edwin Basso's book. If you want more information about it, simply click on it. Hey, welcome in. Time to conclude in the longest segment of our particular program every single Friday, KER Politics, talking with Jim McKinney. You know, Jim McKinney, I got to tell you, why don't you guys on the blog give him a little bit of a heads up, not a heads up, but give him a little bit of a pat on the back. His political comments are the best anywhere. No wonder he's a regular contributor now, regular published contributor to the Epoch Times. Jimmy, you sent me an email this morning talking about the timeline of when Trump actually was involved with Russia and how guilty Trump actually is in that. Can you tell that story to our audience?
Well, sure, I can talk about it. I mean, as we've gone through this entire fiasco of the Russia collusion narrative, Cheryl Atkinson, she was a former CBS reporter that was spied on by the Russian, by the Obama administration as a journalist. And she writes a very interesting article with a timeline of what has happened and how this conspiracy and the collusion conspiracy theory had passed. And it basically starts in March of 2016 with a DNC representative, Alexandra Chalupa, going to top Ukrainian officials at the Ukrainian embassy in D.C. to try to expose ties between Paul Manafort and Russia, because Paul Manafort was just new aboard the Trump campaign. The reason why Trump hired Manafort, not because they were great friends, but because Manafort had a very good sense of how to work the Electoral College and where to focus efforts on. And so from that time forward, the timeline that she puts, and it's published in Just the News, a very interesting new news site that I think is, you know, very, very credible and accurate, it appears to be. They basically walk through this timeline through March of 2016, April, when the Ukrainians get involved, some of the specific things that were written about, you know, these connections,
right,
to start the story. And yeah, and it walks it all the way through the summer and when they start the investigation. And what is not on this is the timeline of what Admiral Mike Rogers, my former boss, who I worked for every day for and spoke briefed every day for a couple of years, what he had done to identify that there was some very serious concerns about searching NSA databases for American citizens and his doing an audit and shutting that program down. If you match those two up, those two timelines up, it'd be very interesting to watch what happens. And what it shows is an incredibly corrupt effort by the Obama administration to set up the Trump administration, or the incoming potential candidate, and then the administration, for this whole Russian collusion narrative. It's quite disturbing.
Well, I'll say it's quite disturbing, but it's not really disturbing to me. It's cause for celebration, actually, for me, because not only does Donald J. Trump's apparent opponent in the upcoming election continue to show the world how really ineffective he is, how what an inappropriate candidate he is, I also love to see the Democrats, who I despise because of their lack of class and character, go down flaming like this, Jimmy.
Yeah, what we're seeing right now, what I think is very interesting, is journalists, professional journalists, that are so far committed into this story that they've perpetuated for over 3 years, attempting to try to justify and to cover up continually as document after document after document comes forward. I think the politicians, you know, that's what they're going to do. You know, that's what they're paid to do, to protect their candidates and to smear. But the journalists now are involved in it directly. And I think, you know, a lot of Americans are really starting to wonder and probably not trust many of the sources that they've looked at over the last few years as actual documented evidence comes out of this entire fiasco, farce, hoax, you name it. I'll call it treason or sedition, because that's exactly what it was, an attempt to undermine elected government.
But here's my question, Jimmy. President Obama, former President Obama and his family are almost considered to be Jesus and Saint Mary in our society. Is anybody ever going to buy the story of what may very well be what actually they were like, or he was like?
You know, that's a very good question. And I will say that there's going to be a certain number of people and this is, you know, carried forth even from the Nixon era and the Watergate impeachment effort. There were people that still think that he got a raw deal, that Nixon got a raw deal, and they don't really accept the narrative, and they figured it, there was too many political moves that were unfair against him, and they tainted him Nixon very badly. So there's a group of people that still kind of don't support that. There's a lot of people that are going to continue to believe the narrative that Obama is the best president ever, and there's a certain number of them that will never change that opinion. I think that's not what you're going after. You're not going after the people. When I say going after, you're not trying to convince people that won't be convinced. What you're trying to do is actually provide enough information out there that the average independent voter, the average citizen in the moderate you know, from either side of the party actually can look at the facts, make decisions on their own, and that will tip the balance. And I believe that's a very important effort right now that's going on dealing with COVID. It's dealing with the Russia collusion narrative, with the impeachment scandal, with all these different accusations that have really unfortunately plagued this administration, which have drugged down the country. And I think a lot of people are beginning to wake up for it. But you're right. There's some people that will never change their minds. They're blinded and they're looking for something to confirm their bias. And that's what they listen to.
You know, and I suppose I can appreciate that. To me, that's very sad. By the way, I'm one of the people who fall into the Nixon camp that when you compare Watergate, you know, the proven actions of what the Nixon administration did during Watergate, you know, and given the fact that I spent some time in Washington, D.C. since then with some of the players, with some of the Watergate players who actually did time, and I had a chance to chat with them one-on-one, face-to-face, watch their body language, et cetera, et cetera. I don't put Nixon in an incredibly bad light compared to what politics has evolved into today, Jimmy. You know, you can never talk to me again, but that's just my opinion.
No, I actually am in the same boat. You know, what Nixon did, the guy pulled us out of Vietnam. He, well, sadly, unfortunately, started this whole China debacle, but it was a good thing at the time. Mm-hmm. He got detente with the Soviets. He did a lot of things that were very positive. He went through some significant crises and helped the country. So, you know, from a leadership perspective, he was very well liked, and he did a fantastic job in the 72 election, just destroying the opposition. But the level that the Democrats wanted to spend and his personal mistakes to try to defend people that he probably shouldn't have tried to defend, he would have been much better off had he just said, hey, you know, that was a huge mistake and let that go. But that's not the way things worked back then.
No.
Unfortunately, we see a repeat of this where there's a level of corruption and protection on the Obama administration where people are protecting some of these people that clearly broke the law. And law enforcement officials, Department of Justice officials, FBI officials that clearly stretched, if not completely broke, precedent, policy, and legal action with the Flynn case, as well as the Mueller investigation, the FISA abuse in the courts. And I think that people are beginning to, you know, again, that's that middle ground. You're never going to get a bunch of people that hate Obama, or I shouldn't say you're going to get a core group of people that always love him. But I think even you would say that, you know, Nixon probably made some bad judgment there at the end.
Of course he did. Sure.
Yeah. And that's what we're trying to get, where people actually understand and realize what's happening here and really get our government to respect the fundamental principles that, you know, we have and what our laws are based upon. And without that, we really lose our nation. So we need to fix it.
Yeah. You know, Jimmy, we got to close here in about 20 seconds. And I want to close with this thought that I know you completely agree with. And that is, America has fallen back a few steps of late, okay? And certainly Donald Trump has brought that out. I don't think Donald Trump is one of the reasons that it has fallen back a few steps. I agree with Josh Phillip of the Epic Times that taking on the swamp was a very difficult task for him to do. But I got to say, I think that we are on our way back.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.